Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast. This is your host, Jamil Hassan, a.k.a. Crypto Hipster, where I cover blockchain and crypto thought leaders around the world. And today I have a very special guest. He is the founder, co-founder, president of Particia Blockchain. His name is Kurt Nielsen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, and thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming. To discuss a topic that we don't really cover that much, that we need to cover more. So I'll start out with a basic question: is what is your background and how does it relate to what you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm actually an economist in my profession as an economist, and I was doing my PhD on market design and game theory when I discovered what they were doing in computer science on MPC, multi-party computation. That's sort of the starting point for me, since MPCs was basically solving a basic assumption in economics that if you had like a trusted third party, you could tell that third party everything and you could basically make a better allocation of resources in the economy by having that third party sort of dictating what people should do in their best interest. This is kind of a famous Nobel Prize winning result in economics. And I thought that was like a common construct in economics, but it turned out that computer science was solving this in practice. And that was the starting point like 15 years ago and the starting point for a lot of research and the Particia company that was a spin out from the first use of this technology back in 2008 and 2009, and that's where the story behind Particia and recently Particia blockchain starts.
So what is the Particia Blockchain Foundation and what are some of the current initiatives that you're involved with?
Yes, so it goes back a long time. So we were the first one who actually used MPC, multi-party computation in practice. And we have developed the technology further and used it and matured the technology. So it's become like a million times faster since the initial use, which has opened up for a lot of new use cases, like using this as a new sort of infrastructure for data in general. And recently, we take this infrastructure and launch it as a public blockchain. So we set up a foundation in Switzerland, like other projects like Ethereum, like Cardano, like many other projects that is run by a governed by a non-profit organization out of Switzerland that has that locked purpose to launch and further develop the infrastructure. Yes, so that was the starting point for Particia blockchain. And that was only in October, November last year. So for 10 years back in time, we worked on using MPC for a lot of different use cases. And for the past 3 and 4 years, we have built MPC together with traditional blockchain technologies. And that is the basic sort of technological foundation for what we call Particia blockchain today.
I joined the blockchain industry in 2017, and I was in the ICO space, and I had reached out to people across the world, and I had a newsletter briefly for a brief time. And one of the things I found, well, there's in 2016 to 18, there's this GDPR, which stands for General Data Protection Regulation in Europe. So when I sent out my newsletter, people kept responding with, don't send this to me. That legislation, set clear international guidelines for data and data processing and other stuff within the EU. What do you feel were some of the major burdens placed on businesses by this legislation, like for you? What do you think?
Yeah, at first it might sound like a bit of a speed bump for digitalization in Europe, but I think it's actually pretty, it's a forward-looking type of regulation that sort of try to bring back control of data to the individuals and allow you as an individual to control your data and maybe also gain insight in how your data is used. So that's sort of the maybe some of the underlying philosophy for the GDPR. But if you look at GDPR and what it requires and you look at blockchain, then it looks like a bit of a crash. So you have a public, transparent and immutable ledger, and you have GDPR saying that you should have privacy and you should have the right to be forgotten, just to mention two things. And that seems to be not a very good match. So this was kind of one of the starting point for our projects. So we have been building for regulation like GDPR from the beginning, and the Patricia blockchain solved these issues by not putting data on the public ledger, but having the public ledger use that as a way to orchestrate secure multi-party computation. So you only have sort of the public blockchain as a some sort of a state machine or a total order broadcast. Some developers would probably call it that. And then you can use that as a way to orchestrate the multi-party computation and the privacy preserving use of data. So that from the use for a certain application, you bring in the data encrypted into this system and operate on the data in a way such that each of the nodes involved in the computation has zero information about the original data, and out and you get the data at the end of the of that computation. And the data is then deleted. So it's sort of a infrastructure that uses private data ad hoc. That's one way to describe it, at least. So the whole attempt from what we're doing is basically to create an alternative to the traditional approach. When you want to create value out of data, you try to kind of bring data together, build even larger data silos or data lakes in order to gain more insight, and replace that approach with an infrastructure. And create the infrastructure in a way such that the owners of the data, it could be citizens, it could be companies, that can bring the data in without sharing the data, but bring the data in encrypted form, and the infrastructure is then sort of dictated to use the data in a certain way, scripted to do so. Yeah.
So I understand what you said about the data and infrastructure and the creation. I understand that. The GDPR, however, created business problems, didn't it? Like major business problems in Europe. What were some of those major business problems?
Yes. So to some extent, if you look at the GDPR, it's not that different from what you had before, especially not if you look at the German data regulation. Before GDPR, then it's not that different from what you have in GDPR. Though the main difference is probably the enforcement and the size of the penalties, and that is a big change because that's simply align antitrust with data breaches. So you have the same sort of frames for how much you can penalize companies for antitrust actions as well as data breach actions. And that sort of is a serious cost to take into account as a company that you have this risk. So the awareness of the data regulation, which is not that different, as I mentioned, than what it was before, is just more critical today.
So say I'm a data company. Say I'm a medium-sized data company in Denmark, right? And I'm conducting business overseas in Asia and the U.S., and I'm providing them with, you know, metrics or, you know, products or services or, you know, whatever. What are some of the antitrust things that I needed to, as that business owner, needed to look out for under the GDPR that I wasn't aware of looking out for that would have cost me my business?
Yes, so it might be easy to if you just bring in your existing solutions that develop for Asian market or the US market, just bring them into Europe without any sort of changes. You might likely break some rules in the GDPR, and then you have the risk of facing these like huge penalties. So that's the issue. But you can go the other way around. So that's, you can bring an EU system to the US or to Asia, because it's kind of a hierarchy like that. So you have the strongest privacy regulation in Europe. Although, I mean, you see this other places. You have California having somewhat similar requirements. In Brazil, you have something that looks like this, and as well as in Japan. So it's sort of spreading this idea about regulators coming in, protecting the individual's data. Whether that is good for business or not, I mean, that's it's definitely open up for a new type of business solutions, and that's kind of what we are bringing to the market. So the infrastructure that is built into a solution like Patricia Blockchain solve all the GDPR requirements, and in doing so, you can actually turn it around, and you can include even better data, even more personal data into your solutions. But you just have to go by the individual citizens or companies and get their consent for the use of these data. But if you do so, then you actually have a very sort of a close connection. You might actually connect directly to the end users that you are really looking for, that you're doing all the big data analysis and all the token or the cookie information and trying to sort of guess who people are and what they like. You can actually create a direct connection with the end users. So to that extent, I think it's actually sort of paying the way for a more sort of egalitarian approach to the digitalization and the internet economy.
So providing data to the end users directly, so that would improve the problems or that were caused from a data controller perspective.
Yes. So for the data controller, those are the parties that is regulated by the GDPR. They have to fulfill all these requirements because they control operate directly on the data. And if you look back at the Patricia blockchain and the multi-party computation, you actually have a solution where each of the nodes involved in the computation compute on zero knowledge, provable and no information, basically. So you can, by mathematical proof, you can show that there is no information. So it is, in GDPR terms, completely anonymous information. So in that sense, you're actually not part of GDPR any longer. So that's the that's maybe some of the prospect for this type of technology, is that if you process data this way, you maybe not even part of GDPR. But this remains to be confirmed by lawyers and by data regulators in Europe. This is something that we are looking into, but it takes time to explain this and to have lawyers running a legal process around this understanding of the technology.
Interesting. there have been, at least where I'm sitting in the U.S., there have been some large scale data breaches with like Facebook and other, you know, large institutions. You know, how could these breaches, apparently, or leaks, or whatever you want to call them, be reduced through your multi-party computational computing?
That's a good question. So if you, what we basically solve for with MPC is to protect data in all of its potential stages. So data can either be at rest or in transit, moving from A to B, or it's being used. So the difficulty is, of course, to protect data while in use. But that's exactly what you do with MPC. So with this type of zero knowledge protection in all of its potential three stages, you actually have a complete new security model for how to protect data. So instead of building firewalls and protection around your system, you actually go in and encrypt data itself and distribute data into a distributed system. And that itself is now a trusted and a new security system. So that's what it brings. And if you have that, then it becomes, it's not impossible to break. But now you have to break into, I don't know, if you have five servers, you have to break into these five servers and likely without anyone noticing it, and tap all the data and then put it together, and then you can reconstruct the truth. So we are sort of lifting the barrier for these big data breaches.
So you said two words there, which leads me to a follow-up question. You said trust and unbreakability. And whenever I hear the two words trust and unbreakability together, I automatically think of Bitcoin. I think of the Bitcoin blockchain, not the wallets or the exchanges, but the actual blockchain. How does your invention compare to the Bitcoin blockchain as far as breakability and security?
Yes, it's solving a very different problem. So the Bitcoin protocol was all about transparency and immutable, having an immutable ledger. And then put the use case of money on top of that, which is pretty a fantastic idea, and really it proved its worth in reality. And this the longest chain system with the consensus, it really works. It's consumed tons of energy. That's not a good thing, but it works. It solved the security issues and has shown that it do so in practice. So if we look at the MPC, then that's solved for privacy. So that's all about keeping privacy encrypted, and it actually goes back even further. So this has been like a holy grail in computer science for the past 40 years to solve this problem, because it's exactly opening up for a completely new paradigm of how you can protect systems. And this zero knowledge approach is a mathematical approach. So what you can do is you make a mathematical proof, so we have provable security. Say, okay, this system, you can only break this system if you break into three out of five of these nodes running the system. And that you can write down as a mathematical proof. So that's the type of system. And that's sort of, so it's not unbreakable, but it's just making it more complicated. Like Bitcoin is not unbreakable, but you need to take control of 51% of the computing powers and do a lot of hashing there. So it's two very different, it's solving two very different things, but it's still also two very strong security model. One is maybe, I think MPC is more based on theory and math than Bitcoin has proved its worth in practice, which is might even better. So it's two very strong security models, And that's to some extent what we bring together. We do a different type of public ledger than the proof of work. Like most new projects, they do something like more community-based type of consensus protocols, one way or the other.
I understand. It's interesting that they're both based on math. It's great. There's so many areas of math we haven't really even uncovered yet, and the future mm-hmm. looks bright, I think, for research at least. And you know, looking at let's look at additional benefits of MPC. How could we increase digital innovation, like in industries where data security is essential, such as, you know, banking or insurance or telemedicine?
Oh, yes, yes. And this is exactly where we are, where things is heading. The internet is becoming a part of this value transfer or this sharing of very sort of sensitive data, even DNA sequencing, etc. So I think that the requirements for privacy protection comes natural, not just by regulation, but by people who actually see an idea in protecting something like information like this, your health data and financial statement, your insurance data, etc. So I think it's more incentive for these cases. I think it's actually incentive driven, not necessarily regulatory driven. The need for privacy. And here, if you use this type of privacy, then you to solve this problem. Let me put it that way. So to solve this problem, a lot of this is like it's essentially an informational deficit. So in insurance, you need information. You don't know what you can distinguish between good and bad. So you build sort of a solution and try to put people into a group, and then you try to have someone paying more because they seem to be a more risky type than others, etc. That's kind of the insurance model, but that requires a lot of information. And this information is typically sensitive information. So with the better security model you have, the more information you can include into a system like this. And you don't need to share that information with the insurance company and give that company a stronger position or turn the data towards you in a different context. You can isolate the use of the data for the specific insurance, the specific case that you are insuring against. So that's, I think that's important for insurance, and banking is a bit the same. This is also about, I mean, finding out who can pay back the loans, credit assessment. This is exactly the same as in insurance. You need to separate good from bad. So you need some signals. You create a credit scoring. For that, you need a lot of private information again. In the US, you do it a bit different than we do it here. Here's the bank who have to do the credit scoring. You have your own personal credit scoring that you can use to shop around. That's how you sort of different ways to facilitate competition in the financial sector. But in either case, you involve a lot of private information, and that is needed in order for the banking industry to separate good from bad, basically, and give you a more competitive price or competitive interest rate on your loans.
So with banking, I have a simple question there is, you know, initially banks were against Bitcoin and spoke out against it, and now they're starting to embrace it. So you had Bitcoin on one spectrum. You had on the other spectrum, you had a crypto XRP, which they started out of the gate working with banks. So how do you see your company positioned between the two extremes? And how would you benefit or how you know, banks or how would they be, you know, not benefit them? Where do you lie in that spectrum?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we actually are placing ourselves sort of in between. So the way we organize the computing nodes is in a semi-permissioned way. So it's we want to create a market for trust. So how do you do this? So we have that when you come in as a node operator, you get whitelisted to run a certain jobs, and then you have to tell the world who you are, and you get assigned a trust score, which is reflecting your performance and if there has been any issues during your operation of that node. And then you will be able to sort of benefit, make profit based on your trust, based on your perceived trust by the market. So we turn trust into a part of the commodity you sell as a node operator. So that's very different from a permissionless blockchain. It's more like a traditional internet economy where you have scorings and the taxi drivers is rating the passengers and the passengers is rating the taxi drivers, etc. You have some kind of a trust scoring part of that of these two-sided markets. And here you have another two-sided market with node operators on one side and users of these applications or applications on the other side. So we're trying to do the same. However, it's open for anyone to come in and run nodes. And if they have a low trust score at the end, hopefully the market will react to that.
I like that concept of trust score, and you just mentioned low trust score. I'm looking at the world of media right now as I'm getting more involved, and breaking out of echo chambers seems to be a narrative out there. Seems to be a common worldwide issue. And how would you've created something called Instars, right? So I want to ask about that and the trust and trust scores together. How would that launch help content creators break out of big tech's socially engineered algorithms and allow people to have greater digital freedom, I guess, and trust?
Yes. I have to. So we were building the infrastructure that is used by Instars, and the team behind Instars is actually part of this Patricia blockchain. So we have collaborated with another team that basically found us, and we helped them building the infrastructure for Instars, which is a social network built together with a data exchange, social network and data exchange built together somehow. So it's looking towards a future sort of a data market, and it's do exactly this thing about using MPC to reclaim control of private data, and you as a user have your data control on your mobile phone, and when someone requests your data, you actually become part of an MPC computation. And if there's a match, you can sell your data to that data requester. So that is an example of how you can sort of create transparency about how data is used. And you can, so that's one thing about the algorithm. You can create transparency about the algorithms used, and you can at the same time protect the data that goes into the algorithm. So if you can do both of these, both create transparency about how the data is used, as well as not really sharing data, but just putting data to use with zero knowledge computation, then you have solved a lot of things at the same time.
So how would you think that, I guess it would, but how do you think that creating greater privacy, great data controls as a private person would improve trust of the overall system or market?
Yes, so I would expect that you would have more trust to a system. Let's say this is Instars.com. They are sort of an intermediator. So you can, I think, better trust them because they don't have your data. There's no way that they can use your data and sell that for some other purposes. They have to tell you exactly how these data is used. So So you don't have to trust the company or the people. You have to, you can look directly into the smart contracts that is dictating what data is used for. So I would expect that this is what builds trust.
Excellent. So this has been an eye-opening conversation for me. I'm beginning to understand data privacy better in the EU and around the world. And we're going to continue to learn and grow. So I asked my last question is, how can people find out more information about you, about what your company does, about what you do? How can they do that?
Yes, so the new project, Patricia Blockchain, have a homepage, and we have a Medium blog where we writing about the technology and the use of the technology, and we will very soon launch the first version. We are running a testnet of the network, and we will launch the mainnet, and then it's open for people to come in and developers to come in and build applications on top of this infrastructure, or maybe just tap into the infrastructure whenever you need to keep something private, because that's kind of one of our approach, that we're not trying to compete with the other blockchain. We're trying to sort of add on to that by becoming a second layer that can be used from Ethereum, from Cardano, or from a different blockchain ecosystem. So you can read a lot about that on the homepage and the Medium post. I think this is where the most information is.
Awesome. Thank you very much. It's been an honor. It's been a pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks a lot for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.